Well, hello everyone. How are we doing today? Well, we got a new member. Hello, Salty Team. Salty Texian. That's a good name. Excuse me for the mispronunciation. We're not going to be doing so much, at least not to start with. I'm not going to be doing like a video thing or whatnot. I'm just going to be kind of chatting with you guys. It's been a couple of weeks. I've been really busy. I figure there's worth chatting about. And we'll talk about life in general and all kinds of goofy shenanigans, archaeology and all that jazz. All right. Flexes. We're doing flexes. Hey there, Timmy, Nick, No Borders, Ian. Really 757. Hey, how you doing? Do you have to water the house? No, I watered the front yard. Yeah, I was pretty lucky actually. It's kind of funny. There was a very little, for those who are unaware, I was in Austin for a couple of weeks, or for a week and a few days, and I was in Sedona before that. It's hot as sin down there, as we'll discuss. But when I came home, I had like a day that it wasn't insane. They were talking about a fire. I get here, and yeah, the evacuation warnings the next day are so bad that it's like a little area like this, and I'm in this little negative spot that's not being evacuated. I was really lucky in those regards. Very lucky in those regards. I mean, enough that I packed up a bunch of clothes and my computer and stuff and had it all ready to go. So if stuff went to hell, I could take off if push came to shove. But yeah, anyway, that was not very fun, not very relaxing because, you know, as you can imagine, after being gone for 2 weeks, I did come back feeling a little behind the eight ball, wanting to do some catching up. I wanted to do some live streaming, but I didn't feel like doing any live streaming until I was at least certain that I could sit down and talk to you guys without being pulled away from in the middle and told that you had to escape. Yeah, it was crazy. I made your baby powder stock go up 3 points, but yeah, I had a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun going to Austin. Austin was a blast. For those of you who aren't aware of the Mystery Boys, I'm doing a bit of a for real quick here. Red is asking what the topic is today. We're just going to try to talk to the chat for a little bit. I might pull up a video and start looking at different things and whatnot. But it's been a couple of weeks, and I've been chatting a lot with you guys before that, and just kind of, you know, giving you a little of me behind the scenes kind of personalness, and you haven't been getting any of that. And tomorrow I'm going to be doing a live stream, and I'm going to be doing that one for channel members only. So be aware, if you're a channel member, there'll be about a 1 hour stream tomorrow around the same time. I'll announce it on the tabs page and stuff, and you'll see it. But at any rate, tomorrow there'll be a live stream for channel members only. Okay, when I went to Texas, one of the things that I was doing was hanging out with people that that are in, I guess you could just, for lack of a better term, call it the Rogan sphere. Guys like Kurt Metzger. Kurt's become a decent friend. I would call him a pretty good friend. I like Kurt a lot, and he seems to like me. We get along well. If you're not aware of the Mystery Boys podcast, I was on that. It should be airing here any day now, and that was a whole ton of fun. That was one of the things I did in Austin, was just to hang out with, one of the reasons I was there was to promote this event that's coming up in October, the, Quest for Ancient Civilizations. That's going to be in the same venue that they film Austin City Limits, the ACL Live. It's a huge freaking thing. Thank you, Chunk Lydell. Love you too. Appreciate it. But one of the things I did was on the Mystery Boys, and that's a real fun podcast. If you're not aware, Kurt Metzger, Duncan Trussell, and we talked about all kinds of goofy shit. We also had Jamar Neighbors on there, the comedian. He was absolutely hilarious. We had a lot of funny. I had a lot of fun, made a lot of good jokes, and we discussed a lot of archaeology and stuff too, and a lot of stuff that, Duncan wasn't aware of that Kurt was, and it, a big chunk of it. It just kind of floored Duncan with a huge, huge chunk of the stuff. What was really funny was, so the night before I'm at the green room in the Comedy Mothership. For those who aren't aware, that's the backstage room where all the really cool kids get to go. And so I'm back there, and I'm just fucking tore up. All right. I'm 16 bajillion sheets to the wind. And the next morning comes, and I'm at 1 o'clock. I'm supposed to meet Kurt at this specific address in Austin to do the live stream. Do the Mystery Boys. I show up there, you know, 20 minutes early. We're about 40 minutes early. There are eight different units at that address. And I text Kurt, I'm like, which one? And he's like, I think unit 6. I'm not sure. I'll be there soon, but not yet. Okay. It's 118 degrees or 113 degrees out or some crazy shit. I'm burning up. All right. Like, I go find a park bench that's in the shade near unit 6 on the hopes that Kurt's right. And I can feel the heat stroke coming on. I'm taking off my shoes. I'm taking off my socks. I take off my shirt. I'm pouring water over myself. And then these two girls come out of the building to this crackhead-looking motherfucker, just half-naked, doused in water. Yeah, that was not one of my proudest moments. It was funny. We laughed a lot. We do reference it quite a bit. Kurt makes fun of me a lot for it during the Mystery Boys, and I can't blame him. It was over an hour of me sitting inside of the thing afterwards. They gave me ice packs, and I'm like sitting there holding it, putting it on like the back of my knees and in my armpits. I was fucking cooked. I swear, if I'd have been out there 10 more minutes, it probably wouldn't have been, the dunking channel would have ended. But at any rate, it didn't. It was a lot of fun. I did get to traumatize a couple of ladies about half my age, which, you know, I haven't done that since I was half my age. But anyway, it was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed myself. Getting to chat Kurt and Duncan, like, I've watched the Mystery Boys before, but being part of it's fucking hilarious because they're so different from each other, but there's such a huge overlap that, that yin yang kind of thing, the push and pull is absolutely hilarious. You just got an MTG ad, huh? Good job. That's awesome. And Wizards of the Coast, you give me money. Oh, this is just regular old Arizona tea. I'm back to my normal self. Dude, holy shit. 2 days ago, like, I slept so fucking hard. Being gone for 2 weeks, I slept so ridiculously hard. I mean, I want to say I slept like 8 hours and got up and slept like 6 more hours, something like that, to the point where my son was picking on me about it. But yeah, I slept a ton. Thank you, Medi. Yes, I'm still alive, still have a bitchin' beard. I'm getting ready to go to Lake Chelan before too much longer up in Washington. That's going to be at the beginning of October, and at the end of October, or the middle of October, excuse me, I'm going to be doing the event in Austin. Hoping to make another trip to Austin before that. Chatting with some more of the people there. I mean, I spent a lot of nights. I was in Austin for 8 nights total. I left the morning of one of the, you know, I get up and eat and leave. So really 7 nights of party. And 4 of those nights I was in the Comedy Mothership, kicking it backstage with people and stuff. It was, I mean, I got to shake hands with Ron White and Brian Collin from, I knew him from Mad TV originally. What happened to my nose, in all honesty, is the heat, the dry skin. It's right on top where my sunglasses rest. It's what's frustrating, Timmy, you bastard. Yeah, it's frustrating, but yeah, that it's like, I guess, where all the sweat or grease, or I don't know, but anyway, it's where my sunglasses rub, and whenever I get owies on my nose, that's usually the first place. Seems like every time I travel to the Southwest anymore, I get like dry cracking skin on my face. It sucks, but you know, I don't look like the Arizona women just yet, but I'm working on it. You can see why they wear those big ass wide hats down there. Jesus Christ. Yeah, it's all texting. We do have a lot of conventions coming up. Zombie Dan. Yeah, I kind of like a zombie. Kind of like a zombie, but not exactly. Had a lot of fun. So, hey, Hail from Brown's Edition. That's right down the street. Brian Collin, the Grapist. I didn't know. See, you know, I don't know that about everybody. See, this is the kind of shit that is actually honestly frustrating. It's pissed to me. It's like Control-Alt-Dig. If that's true, well, that's terrible. But like expecting everybody to know these things, it's like, that's, I mean, I don't know about you, But I don't have this checklist. It just fucking scrolls by. It tells me, oh, this person's like this, and this person's like that. And come on, man. Pat O'Neill's hilarious. He's very much, you know, he's intelligent. He's into the pyramids and stuff to a degree. But one of the funny things about Pat is how, like, focused he is on the craft. Like, him and Ari Matheson both, you hear them talk, and it's like their head just keeps circling back to the craft of being a comedian. Like, that's that they're definitely preoccupied. They're very, it's definitely driving them a lot, which is awesome. What about the Denisova bracelet video? I didn't make a Denisova bracelet video. But yeah, the Denisova bracelet's pretty interesting. That's for those of you who aren't aware. Oh, I can probably pull up a picture of it even. They made this little bracelet. It's like a jade or some shit like that. Little green rock. And probably should spell Denisova, right? But yeah, it's a little green rock, and they used a drill on part of it. Here's a good image right there. Let's just get to the... Then I can press the share screen button. It's crazy. It's almost getting good at this stuff. But yeah, this is a picture of the damn thing. That little hole on the right there, that's like what they drilled. They used some sort of drill for it. Now, it's not so precise that they couldn't have done it with like a stationary type of thing. You know, you could rig this up with a couple of stones. I think that's an important thing. I think it's an important thing to be aware of, is like you could just have like a place where the rocks naturally dovetail in a spot, and if you could get a stick in there and use that as a guide or something, you could put something else to brace up against it. It's not impossible for them to have pinched these kinds of things. It's really, really interesting because it's super ass old, right? I recently covered the cave that they've got in France, where they just kept going. The Neanderthal was replaced by Homo sapien, but the culture stayed the same. That's really crazy when you think about it, where they're using the same culture but different people. I mean, that's kind of Middle Earthy when you think about it. It's like the remembering the ways of the old species or whatever. They worked together and one died off. Yeah, yes, Salty. Perhaps it was a bow was used. What is this thing made out of? Oh, what's the thing they made out of? I'm trying to read here real quick because somebody asked. Chlorite. It's made out of chlorite. But yeah, that's apparently a green rock. So anyway, you know, I got to do some of that crap, and I'm going to be down there again soon. And then down there again soon. I'm going to be traveling a lot more than I was planning on, it seems. Yes, exactly, 757. It's not ancient high technology. It's ancient techniques. That's exactly what we're looking at here. And that's honestly, you know, a lot of people say that it's boring. I mean, nobody needs to say it. It's a whole lot more boring to speculate on how they might have used a bow drill than how they might have had ancient high technology to spin a hand drill. But it's really interesting it's important when you come at these things that you take the things that we know we can achieve readily and you eliminate them out the gate. If you don't do that, then you're not really going to you're not going to be very convincing even to yourself at the end of the day. If you look at it, you're like, well, yeah, I mean, I suppose I could do that with ancient high tech. Then what are we even talking about? So that's where it's important to thine own self be true, as they say. But honestly, you got to be skeptical of your own shit. If the Atlanteans were just making that would be boring, exactly. Wish you would come through Tucson. I want to take you for a ride on the sidecar and buy you a beer. Ah, sorry, but thank you. Excuse me. Yeah, I've met a lot of people that wanted to meet up with me when I was in Texas too, and I've got limited hours in the day. It's like basically show up where I'm at and we can hang out. But beyond that, I, you know, I no offense, I go to a spot I can't really go run. My fans are really important to me, and meeting you guys in person is important to me. Like spending the time to shake hands, listen to different theories, and you know, all that stuff. It's important, but it's also I have to kind of put myself in a spot like I'm doing in Austin and say, all right, here I am, October 16th or 18th. Do you want to see me? Here's where I'm going to be. Come talk to me. And outside of that, it's impossible for me to track y'all down on every road trip. If I stopped at every one of these places, it'd go crazy. It'd be crazy forever. Hey, Dan, you just saw your life. How the hell are you? I'm doing really good, man. Thanks. So what should we talk about, guys? Should I pull up another? Should I pull up some more of What's His Face's video of Jeff's Land of Chem stuff? We could talk about all kinds of different things. I mean, I'm working on a response right now to Milo Rossi's video on the Second Sphinx. I don't know if any of you guys saw that. Holy shit, that was horrible. The stuff he was saying about Matt Bell, especially, was just like, what the fuck? He's like saying Matt Bell is an example of one of the ultra wealthy using his wealth to dumb down the public kind of thing. It was just like, holy shit, my God, dude. One of the most insane things I've ever seen in my life. So there's so much info out there that's impossible to tell what's true, might be true, and what is bunk. You know, that is very, very true. You can't, I'm going to say it a lot lately that the way that they've handled, you know, when I was younger, they limited information heavily, and the way that they can't filter it like that anymore. It's like something like Hillary Clinton fainting during the election cycle. That was the kind of shit that used to be bought. That footage would have been bought and nobody would have ever seen it. But nowadays, there's nothing they can do about it. By the time they know it exists, it's already gone viral. So they've handled this in another way. And the way they're doing it now is they just throw so much shit out there that you hide the needle in the stack of needles. You make so many outlandish, crazy conspiracy theories that every time you turn on the internet, you hear another one, so that when they hand you, you know, the federal government saying they're killing and eating kids, they're like, well, that's the new version of the old game. It took them a second to figure it the fuck out. We had a good run for a few minutes there, boys, but it's over now. They've figured out the ways to put the genie back in the bottle as best they can. They just open every fucking bottle and let all the demons out alongside the genies. And here we are. Pull up whatever you're trying to understand. Land of Chem is good stuff. Yeah, that was pretty fun. Yeah, I know it was funny when Mini Minutemen. Oh, thanks, 757. Muchos gracias. When Mini Minutemen. When Mini Minutemen, I made that response video too. It's just all, my phone blowing up about shit. When Mini Minutemen put his, I made my response video to him, and that video where I had my shirt way unbuttoned, it was to pick on Mini Minutemen. There's a whole fucking point, was partially to make fun of Milo Rossi. And I don't know, he'll go, man, you rock that look, Dan. You look against, goddamn, dude. I'm wearing, it's not supposed to look good. It's supposed to look stupid. Thank you, muchos gracias. I should point out really quick, here in Spokane, we're getting a lot of conspiracy theories about fires. A lot of conspiracy theories that it's to build a data center and all that kind of stuff. I don't really know a whole lot about that. I always have a problem with those kinds of big overarching conspiracy theories. But, you know, what do I know? Like I told my friend Jimmy Corsetti when me and him were discussing it, I said, yeah, I'm way less conspiratorial than you are. And in a lot of ways, you know, people are going to pick on me less because of it. But if we were both, you know, Jews living in 1930 Germany, you'd be the one going, man, I think it's time to leave. And I'd be the one going, you're going to put us in camps. Huh? Okay, buddy. So, you know, to each their own. Well, all right. Yeah, let's pull up something here to watch. Why the fuck not? We've got the entirety of the YouTube sphere to pick and poke at, and what does it say? Market with a B, as they say. So then we will look for the land of Kim. All right. I'll get all this finished setting up, all the playback speed to 1.5. I'm getting better at all these things. You'd think that maybe I was smart at this. Not really. You can imagine what it'd be like if I was. All right. Dan, do you remember Chip Hanauer and the Miss Bud? No, I don't remember that. Have I seen Bob Greener's new program? No, I have not. The Jewish space laser one. Kurt likes to talk about Jewish space lasers quite a bit. All right, let's see what Jeff has to say.
We'll see here in just a second.
Hang on. Why am I not getting him? Were you guys able to hear him at all? I'm not able to hear him.
Directly connected to the.
Oh, that's because my audio's turned all the way down.
Function of the Great Pyramid that is built on top of a subterranean cave system that provides a source of hydrogen sulfide gas. So here is a picture of the little temple that they discovered at the top. And he goes in here to explain the correlation between these internal granite stone chambers and the configuration of the Great Pyramid. So here's some pictures of what they found during the GPR scanning. It is 100% a man-made pyramid, and it has internal granite reaction chambers. And at the top of this pyramid, there's a stone circle and obelisk structure that would have functioned as your positive charge accumulator
on top
of the pyramid. So it has a flat top.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So the top of the pyramid is configured with a positive charge accumulator and a standing stone obelisk that would have operated as your lightning rod. It has internal red granite reaction chambers, very similar to what we have with the Great Pyramid. And it also has a subterranean gas source, because the researcher that wrote this book, one of the archaeological members, says that there has to be a source of gas somewhere below the structure to cause these flames shooting out of the top of the pyramid.
I would really like to see some of these things tested, because, I mean, a lot of these are really big if true, right? I would really like to see, a lot of this stuff tested, ultimately. The idea that these things used to do something and now don't, Jesus Christ. This better be a damn emergency, people. There better be a fire. That's poor humor. You know, I feel bad. Some of the people here in Spokane, because I may upload that stupid short making fun of the, not making fun of, but just saying that, you know, the fires were clearly because of, we quit sacrificing babies to Moloch or Mishra or whatever god it is. That, you know, some people were like, that's not very cool. But I mean, did you see what I said when Charlie got shot? I tend to make gallows jokes, guys. That's how that works. I make funnies. All the time, and then it sometimes you cry about things, but when you do, that's when things are pretty bad. I like to laugh, and I do that a lot. But yeah, dude. Oh, thank you, thanks, Dave. I thought it was funny, but you know, everybody loves their own brand. Yeah, it's hard to honestly. A lot of these things, it's hard to say because the tomb thing. Let's put it this way. Say, for instance, that people had some really rudimentary understanding of electricity, right? Say that, like, there was some way for people to use one of these things to do some technological goofiness with, right? Well, if that's the case, wouldn't the rulers of the time wanted to incorporate that kind of magic into their structures, especially their tombs? I mean, it stands to reason it's not far-fetched, right? I mean, it seems reasonable that this is something they would do. So, you know, I don't have a problem with these kinds of things. In a lot of what Jeff's stuff, pretty much the only thing that I've taken issue with of his so far on any like fundamental level is the electric universe things. And a lot of these things don't require the electric universe in order to work. Now, any of the stuff that does, I'm going to be kicking the tires on that a whole lot harder on down the road. Anyway, let's go ahead and carry on here. We'll add more to the stage. Don't forget to donate lots of money to the Super Chats, guys. I just spent a whole shitload of money in Austin, and Spokane's cheap. Austin's rich. So
during the excavation.
He yes, that's me begging. Sorry.
Two other adjacent stone circles. So here's one of the stone circles at Oyu, and you can see here in the background the Coromanta Pyramid. So these two stone circles are directly connected via stone avenues into Coromanta Pyramid. So you have the stone circles. There's a stone avenue that connects these two stone circles, and there's another stone avenue that leads directly to the pyramid.
Wait, go back to the last
one? Yeah.
Where's the pyramid there?
The pyramid is off in the north direction. Got it. It's too far away for me to fit on this slide, but it's just showing that there is a stone avenue that goes off in this direction.
So that avenue on the top connects to the pyramid.
Correct. Yeah. And this was corroborated by the museum archaeologist at the Oyu Stone Circle.
Is it a perfect triangle?
I don't know about that.
Okay.
So he even says here in this report and book regarding the excavation that he thinks there's a connection between these stone circles, which I'll explain exactly what that is here in just a second. And the whole temple site, right? The pyramid, the associated stone circles, and all the structures in the ritual network centered on Mount Coromanta is a network linked to the worship of a snake god. Mm. So when it comes to mythology, there is communication encoded in these snake figures, whether it.
All right, let's stop before we get down into the snake god stuff. Yeah, the idea that these other structures are connected and stuff is interesting. Now, I'll be very myself. I don't have a problem with one or two sites being created to do the to attract electricity, as Jeff's basic hypothesis seems to be. Thank you very much, Nick. I appreciate it. Everybody with those dedunking memberships, tomorrow you'll get to catch me 3, 4, 5, somewhere there. It depends on what kind of my kids' wrestling practice is, but I will be doing a live stream just strictly for channel members tomorrow. So make sure and catch me then. It'll be tremendous. But, anyway, I don't have a problem with one or two of these things working. And even like with the complex of Egypt, if Jeff's hypothesis is accurate and all of Egypt is a connected group of different people, then or a connected group of different different edifices meant to make chemicals, then it makes sense that they would be built over time and each one would kind of work with the next, and I don't have a problem with that so much. My big problems comes with the idea that like kind of lower tech things are connected and stuff, and basically, this is just a very general criticism of ideas like this. And is it true believers tend to see more into their hypothesis than most other people do? They push it further than most people would. They extrapolate it further than most other people would. And like I've been saying, it's been a few weeks now, but like I've been saying in the past when I talk about this stuff, it only makes sense that that's what happens. I mean, you're a true believer in these things. If you start looking at everything through that lens, eventually talk to any religious person and pretty soon you'll see how God's responsible for every fucking thing on the planet. To the point I'll drive you up the friggin' wall, right? That's just how it goes.
It's Kukulkan or Quetzalcoatl,
right.
The Japanese dragon, or the serpent deities, all of these are representative lightning. And for example, the Kukulkan and its descent onto the pyramid of Chichen Itza represents lightning because there is direct connection between the descent of Kukulkan and the beginning of the Mayan agricultural season. Right. So the spring equinox is the beginning of their agricultural season. So when the serpent descends onto the pyramid of Chichen Itza, it represents the lightning striking, bringing agricultural fertilizer for their agricultural season. Mm.
You know, see, that is interesting, but I don't, that's a stretch. Let's be blunt. That's a stretch. It could be, but again, because this, all around the world, every culture sees the serpent as lightning. I'm of a real heart. You're not going to convince me of that one anytime soon. Even though I do believe that there was connection across the pond, look at the difference in the German language and the English language. And this is not a whole lot of time or distance separating them. And they're similar enough. You can understand each other to a degree, but they're also different enough that you can get lost as fuck pretty easily. So when you start separating things by thousands of years and thousands of miles, I think you get what I'm saying here. Saying they're using the same symbolism all across the world. Yeah, I'm going to have a hard time with. And also, I'm going to have a hard time with everybody using the same pyramids for the same thing, the same ideas for the same things. I mean, you end up with a lot of different people doing a lot of different things for cultural reasons that have different symbolic meanings, different practical purposes even. You know, the Polynesians make these little things they're meant to show people how to find ways. I'll fucking pull up a goddamn picture of it. But they, these things look like crosses. You know, they don't look at all like the crosses that, okay, here's a great example. Damn it. Man, the internet's tricky. I'm going to try to remove. Look at how hard this is, man. This is so hard. Yeah, this stuff right here. Okay. So there's a cross. That's a Polynesian cross. And that's used. They would make this like out of sticks to show people how to navigate the water. It's clearly a cross, but it's clearly got a different meaning. You know, man, take it easy, Biscuit. You're just showing up late. Okay, sorry. My point is, though, you can have these things that are different that, different symbolism similar symbolism isn't necessarily going to be the same, different. The same thing. God damn. Yes, I speak for a living, I promise. It's, you know, yeah, exactly. Celt crosses and Hindu crosses, all kinds of different meanings for different symbols. So I have a hard time that something as simple as a snake is going to mean the same thing everywhere. I mean, for example, when Moses put the two snakes on the stick, that clearly wasn't representing lightning, although maybe Jeff would think that it is. But I think that's where it would be like pretty obviously not, right? Yes, 757, a compass or a directional indicator. That's where you could say they're rid of all the Polynesian was not using it that way as a direction compass, but it's still using a directional indicator for sure. All right, carrying on.
Yeah, we had I think it was Dr. Barnhart and Luke Caverns in here.
Yeah,
and Dr.
Yeah.
Barnhart is a
Luke's a good friend.
Luke's great.
Yeah,
I love Luke.
Yeah,
and he brought in this this other gentleman, Dr. Barnhart, who has been studying ancient Mesoamerica his whole entire life. And he's been to all these sites, whatever. And they were explaining to me that they would do like crazy things. Like they were sacrificing people and doing all kinds of things all in the name of bringing rain.
There you go. Yeah.
Because they would get like long dry seasons or whatever. And try to bring and they would do like crazy rituals. They were like messing with people's, like trying to elongate people's heads, like trying to mess with like the morphology of people.
Yeah.
All in the name of like appeasing the rain gods.
Yeah. Yeah. So this was critical to this civilization.
Yeah.
Rain and agriculture were the most important parts of this civilization's existence.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can create systems that have the ability to allocate these natural forces to specific areas, it would have been as if you were able to control the place where the gods descended from heaven.
Right.
And this is a part of a lot of the mythology of the Japanese stone circles, is that...
Okay. Crown goes to who's chatting the most. Yeah, see, I think what we're looking at here is... The elongated skull thing there, I think he's missing something. The elongated skulls weren't just to appease the rain god. They don't really know what the cranial modification was for. I always do anymore, no borders. You know, I've got, for those of you who don't watch me a lot, elongated skulls are something I definitely get interested in, and mostly because the fact is these things are... they're so fucking goofy that they show up with the way that they do, where they do in the record. But in this case, we have a serious weird issue with the elongated skulls. They are they're not, we don't have any fucking clue as to what they were being done for. You know, that we don't know if they were used to promote rain gods. We do know that that area is near the Candelabra of the Andes and that's visible out to sea like 12 miles. So, there's a good possibility, and you know, there's a good possibility that they were in contact with other places up and down the coast. And as I've shown before, there's a huge, you know, the coastal areas of the world is where all that stuff really was connected at. I just wonder if you can take the elongated skull method and apply it to other body parts. But the Austin Powers style, that sort of thing's not my bag, baby. I like big elongated skulls. I like them girthy and short. Myself with a little bump on the top, you know the type. But yeah, honestly, the elongated skull stuff is something. The elongated skulls and the giants. The giant ones lately has been because they're not giants. This is, you know, this is something it's a fucking misnomer. That when they talk about giants, ancient giants in the Americas, they're not fucking giants. They're big humans. There's regular old fucking human size. They ain't nothing outside of the realm of humans. What's interesting is the way that that's all been stamped out. If you didn't catch my last video on it, you absolutely should, because there's a couple videos ago. It's insane what they did to the guy that debunked all the giant bones of the Smithsonian, left the field of medicine to enter anthropology to drive the narrative that white people were better because of the way our bones were shaped. This is no shit. So call me crazy. He's the last guy I'm going to be trusting when it comes to discussing the length of bones. I don't know. You can go to fucking Leonardo DiCaprio for your phrenology discussions on Django. Whatever that. I forget what he went by, his Frenchy ass name on that. But yeah, a bunch of shacks. But big boy. Now here I am. God damn it. I love the internet.
They're called the places where God descended from heaven, or the place where the dragon touched the ground, lightning striking these specific areas.
Right.
There's a direct connection between all of this stuff.
Sure.
And I'm glad to see that even in the conventional academic sense, there's corroboration of this idea.
Yeah.
That they were super, super focused on rain and agriculture.
Yes.
And there's a direct connection between Kukulkan descending on the pyramid of Chichen Itza, representing this feathered serpent god. And the feathered serpent god brings rain, lightning, and nourishes the ground for agriculture because of these atmospheric nitrate fertilizers.
It's just like, I wonder how closely connected those civilizations were in Egypt and Mesoamerica.
Yeah. So,
and Japan.
Yeah. So this is an interesting discussion regarding, is it either single point of origin? So let's say there is Atlantis, single point of origin, where during the destruction of Atlantis, the survivors went everywhere and they had the same knowledge, single point of origin. Second hypothesis is intercontinental travel during that time period, where all of these independent civilizations were traveling across the oceans and sharing knowledge.
Right.
So it's one of those two things for them to have the same knowledge and building these same type of structures in Neolithic UK and also in Japan. Right. These people either have to come from the same point of origin or there was intercontinental travel, which I tend to.
Yeah, I don't know about the. I mean, this is, you know, this where it does get a little tricky. It's I don't think it's going to require intercontinental travel to say that two different cultures could recognize that, you know, lightning struck the high point. So in those regards, I think that it's not necessarily evidence. Now now keeping in mind that Jeff takes it much further than just lightning nitrogenating the ground. I can see where he would think that. And I do think that there was contact between the continents, don't get me wrong. But you know, you take each bit of evidence on its own merit, right? If you can demonstrate that these pyramids, that's what was happening with these, that's what these are for, then that's one thing. But again, a lot of this stuff is really difficult to demonstrate, right? You can't really prove. Okay, here's a really salient question here. Do you think that because of all the online attention to these topics, it's better or worse for the looting side of it? I would say that it makes the looting way, way, way worse. Way, way, way worse. I think that people looting these kinds of sites would be, they're exasperated by these sorts of things. And I think that, depending on part of the country, let's be frank. In parts of the country, especially in Mesoamerica, the organized crime completely dominates life. Completely dominates the legal system. And in those areas where that happens, there's nothing. Yeah, the cat gets out of the bag and fucking Johnny Sicario finds out that fucking, or Jorge Sicario, finds out that the local fucking hole in the ground's got thousands of dollars worth of treasures to sell to stupid gringos. And yeah, they're going to go loot that shit. Do you think they give a flying fuck about stratigraphy or about proper documentation Of course not. They're not in a documentation game down in that part of the world, my friends. That kind of goes against their whole business model, in case you weren't aware. So, you get what I'm saying here? We got a problem. And it's not just even with the parts where it's organized crime. You know, go all the way back to the days of Napoleon in Egypt. It doesn't take a lot of imagination to think about ruins that kids used to play in, places they would throw rocks and play, tell ghost stories and play hide and seek. And then one day dad tells them that, hey, man, these fucking white dudes are coming around paying real money for these little fucking pieces of scrap, nothing. I ran past like 50 of those ever since I was a kid out there. It's been a while. Let's go check. Every one of those fucking places that was in common knowledge got picked clean in the first 10 years, man. Just picked to death. So, you know, the more that these sites are known about, the worse it is in those regards. And the problem is like even in, even in Turkey, shit's disappeared, right? We've had stuff disappear right out from under their nose. And that's, you know, it's a problem. It's a fucking problem, man, because, you know, how much money would it take you? Think about your job. Think about how much money would it take you to stab your employers in the back? And then, like, you think about the amount of money that some of these people can offer for some of these things. Like, how much money do you think the guys that stole the Baghdad battery got paid for it? You know, they probably got quite a bit of money. Hello, Cameron. Good to see you. Yes, Sherman. Pillage and plunder was the point. All right. Was carrying on my wayward nun.
Lead toward the intercontinental travel,
mm-hmm.
where these independent civilizations, they were traveling like the cocaine mummies, right? There's a connection between South America and Egypt with these mummies that have been found with coca leaves.
Right.
So there had to be intercontinental travel and trade between these civilizations for them to be sharing these type of agricultural goods.
Who was the cocaine mummy dude? We were just talking to a cocaine mummy dude, weren't we, Steve? Remember the German guy who went to prison?
I was going to say ivermectin, but the
somebody connected us to a guy who found cocaine in mummies.
Yeah, the German speed guy.
Yeah,
that was looking
he went to prison.
Yeah, I forget what the name of the German speed
was. We had him scheduled at one point. The Corley dude connected him with us.
Oh, the from overseas.
Yeah,
was that Martin?
I don't remember.
Nonetheless, right? Intercontinental travel.
Yeah,
sharing of knowledge and information.
All right, let's talk mummies and cocaine. Two of my favorite subjects. When it comes to the cocaine mummies, for those of you who haven't seen my video, plug, the gist of it is, like so many other things that we find that are problematic, they're anomalous. Guess what they did with the cocaine mummies when they went to do a follow-up? They wouldn't let them sample them a second time. Not any of them. There were nine, the Munich Nine, they're called, nine mummies that are stored in the museum at Munich that supposedly have cocaine in them, nine of them. And they won't let them test one of them a second time, not a single fucking one of them a second time. They get to test other mummies and say whether or not there's cocaine in them that way, which I love this, by the way, as I pointed out in my video. This is what I need to see in a defense attorney. He's like, Your Honor, Mr. Richards did test positive, but his neighbor tested negative. Do you really think he would have it in his system if his neighbor's testing negative? That's their fucking argument, bro. That's their fucking argument. Well, this mummy didn't have any, so clearly this mummy couldn't have had any. Why don't you just let us test Mr. Richards a second time? Oh, no, Your Honor, we can't do that. Would that not, I mean, come the fuck on. This is so basic, stupid, straightforward, but it passes. And because of confirmation bias, because of how this tickles the Atlantis and biblical narratives, and it gets into all this crazy, goofy shit. Now they accept it. Just fucking accept it. Just fucking accept it. Face value. Why look into it? We know it's right. It's just like like we see with the way they treat the archaeologists that are completely full of shit, but they're doing so. They're lying as they debunk Graham Hancock and friends. Well, you know, the ends justify the means, right? Dylan Farr. It'd be interesting to see the mathematical connection stuff. I'll touch base on this real quick. Dylan's saying that there's a math, you know, that Jeffrey brings up the mathematical connection between these different places, and that stuff's interesting to me. But I'll be real honest, like, it's really easy to play games with math, like really easy to play games with math. And so when people say, well, there's, you know, a mathematical connection between these things, that'd be pretty dead on for me to put a lot of stock in them. There are situations where I do look at it, like the 72, 108, 54, all that processional stuff, those get very dead on and over and over and over again.
Which is why we have these aesthetic differences between, for example, the Mesoamerican pyramids, which have a very Mesoamerican style, and the Egyptian pyramids, and the pyramids in Japan.
Sure.
They all have a different aesthetic.
Yeah, the Mesoamerican ones are nuts. They look very pillowy.
Yeah, yeah. They look very different because it was built by the local inhabitants of those particular areas, but they were sharing the knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
So they were traveling, they were sharing construction techniques, they were sharing this technology and how it could benefit everyone on the planet. So they all started building the same things with the same knowledge, but they built them with the different aesthetic style of that particular local inhabitant civilization, which is what I tend to lead to.
Mm-hmm. But they're all-
now, one thing that is would be interesting to look at and see how his theory lines up with this is, one of the ones that's the fucking water pyramid. I've covered it before and I'm drawing a blank, but it's this Tiwanaku, this huge fucking pyramid that they built on. They put all this gravel underneath it, so the gravel like holds water and basically acts as a reservoir. Like the water runs down the pyramid and runs into the gravel underneath the thing and then feeds into this. And the whole thing's all this water symbolism and stuff too. It would be interesting to see how that lines up with Jeff's hypothesis here. Incorporating water straight into it, that would be pretty well. If they were zapping water with electricity all the time, that'd be crazy. Hello, Trish. Hello, Mark. Hi, Dan. Receipts. Yes, I like receipts, especially for different things that you buy.
There are also things that like didn't go that weren't translated across the cultures. Like, there's little weird little things, right? Like in Mesoamerica, they have those little notches that stick out. Like, we don't know what those were for.
Right.
And then it looks like the stones were like placed on top of each other and melted together perfectly.
Sure. Yeah.
So many strange things, man.
Yeah. So when it comes to construction techniques, that's not necessarily my area of research. I have some ideas about that.
Right.
I tend to focus really only on the function of the structures themselves, which, again, there's only so much time in any given day.
Right.
And I've proposed more hypotheses for various structures around the world than I think anybody else has ever attempted to tackle. Mm-hmm. So that's really where, you know, other people need to step up and develop some new hypotheses regarding the construction methods.
Right.
So, because we don't have any revolutionary hypotheses about these construction methods other than people that are talking about geopolymer, which I don't necessarily agree with the geopolymer idea either.
Right. Because that one seems tough.
There's abundant evidence, specifically in Egypt, of quarrying natural stones.
Yes.
We know exactly the quarry sites.
Yep.
We see the evidence of quarrying. There's really no substantial physical evidence in Egypt of geopolymer.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, thank you, Salty Texian, for gifting some memberships there. Muchos gracias. Dave Freed isn't even a real professor. He's not even a real human, I don't think. I think that he's a baby back bitch. But anyway, this is kind of a cutesy one here. We've got the idea that all these different cultures were building things differently for different with the same reason but with different ideas I've got no real problem with the idea that they were all connected or that they had been connected. I at certain times in the past, I don't have a problem with. Maintaining a level of knowledge between all these cultures, I do have a bit of a problem with. And the big one that questioning there is a geopolymer. Yeah, I would agree with him on that. The majority of sites around the world, like South America, Puma Punku, and places like that, yeah, geopolymers. You can start asking questions about it. Beyond that, I don't think that there's too many geopolymer sites. I think you guys, the same thing with a lot of other things. They get overzealous and see it everywhere. Mr. D. Dunker, I will wear out your ear about Peru, Bolivia, Bolivia, Blabli when I catch you in Washington, October. Fuck yeah, you will, 757. Sounds good. Bjorn Ironsides be wilding for real. Hey, Dan, have you ever seen an aerial picture of Teotihuacan? It looks just like the Peter Port. Yeah, it's interesting. Calling Spokane arson. No. Facts. Please hit that like and subscribe. Yes, easily arson. I don't know about all that. We can only verify that he taught a trade school, but what makes fun of you for being an electrician? Yeah, Dave's, you know, Dave tells a lot of lies, ultimately. Like, yeah, it's unfortunate that he's a representative of quote-unquote team science, because, I mean, it's exactly what Sagan warned us about a generation of people that wouldn't know fucking anything. Unfortunately, this generation is telling us not to ask questions, which is even worse. It's bad enough to not know anything. Not knowing anything and then telling people to not ask questions is dangerous as fuck. These pyramids were clearly built for Spider-Man to swing from something. Spider-Man's a swinger. We all knew that.
So I don't necessarily agree with that. I think it's an interesting hypothesis, yeah, but I don't necessarily agree with
right.
it.
Right.
So this is a picture to give you a size of the Coromanta pyramid. Damn, it's huge. And they have, again, GPR scanned this thing, and it is 100% a man-made pyramid that may be built on a
and core. That is accepted by academics?
Yeah, yeah, 100%. Yeah, this book that I showed is an actual archaeological team that did the excavations at the site.
Okay.
At its core, it may be a natural geothermal formation,
mm-hmm.
right? Because there's a source of gas coming from somewhere below the structure.
Right.
That when they cracked into the foundation of this internal chamber, the gas was seeping out, and all of a sudden there's flame shooting out of the top of the pyramid. It's a wild, wild archaeological story. It's called The Pyramid of Gods. It's written in Japanese, so you have to translate the whole thing. But shout out to our buddy Teru that got that book translated for me. All right. So did we talk about the Sphinx step-down transformers, how they reduce voltage?
No.
Okay. So this is kind of important.
Sphinx,
step-down voltage transformers.
Okay.
And the stone avenues that connect all of these systems.
Let's do it.
Okay. So at Avebury, for example, you have these avenues of stone that go from the central concentric circle system. You can see this avenue.
All right. Before we get too far into that side of it, we'll stop because it's going to be that'll be long for a minute there. Yeah, Dave is a bit of a fraud. It's unfortunate. Like, honestly, I would like to be able to have conversations with guys like Dave because, seriously, like, as much of an asshole as he is, it's like the fact of the matter is like, you know, me and Rilo Rossi, for example, we had good conversations. And if you watch his video on the Sphinx, like, he's not opposed to the idea of the Sphinx's head being recarved. Okay. He's not opposed to the idea of the fucking Sphinx, of there being a second Sphinx. He's not opposed to the idea of the synthetic aperture radar finding stuff. As a matter of fact, he says there's probably something there. The problem is it's fucking teams. The problem is the confirmation. I'm going to illustrate it plainly in the video. You know, when me and Jimmy Corsetti, Milo Rossi and Flint Dibble went on Pierce Morgan, the conversation was like, when we were done, me and Jimmy were on the phone talking about how this was good. This was healthy. We could move the fucking, like, we could move the needle here because we've got a chance. Like, we're all getting along and singing Kumbaya, except for Flint, because Flint's a cunt. We all know Flint's a cunt. So then you watch Milo and Flint do a live stream afterwards, and Flint slowly poisons Milo against it. And after 20 minutes, they're just drunk and screaming and crying about how terrible it is and how terrible we are. And it's like, dude, the lies that have been told at this point are just astronomical. Guys like Dave Farina, guys, we could honestly get somewhere, but instead they just want to be dicks and fight about it and be mean and argue and be right because they have degrees and I don't or whatever. It's just fucking gay. And I don't mean gay as in they like to suck cocks. I mean gay as in a bunch of fucking cocksuckers.
Avenue of stone going out to the west and going out to the south.
Yeah.
That connects into the tail end and the head end of the system. We have the exact same thing at the Karnak Temple, where the Karnak Temple is connected into the Luxor Temple via an avenue of sphinxes. And I'll show you here in just a moment that there is a mathematical connection between Avebury and the Luxor Karnak Temple system in Egypt.
Okay.
So the function of Luxor Karnak Temple is very similar to the function of Avebury, where Karnak is your central voltage receiver and Luxor is the head end of the temple complex that is intended for the interface of human beings inside the structures. Like I was saying, it was completely safe to be inside of these things when lightning was striking because there are areas of the temples that are intended for people to be inside of them for a myriad of physical applications.
Okay.
So let's look at the Avebury stones, the Avenue of Stones. So these stones have a bunch of physical features that are indicative of high voltage electrical transmission through the stone. So this is an analysis of the Avebury Stone Avenue. And these stones have peeling, vitrified silica glaze, cracks, creases, lamination, pitting, pinholes, hollows, pellets. All of these features are indicative of high voltage electrical transmission through the stone, specifically the vitrified silica, like melting of silica in these stones.
Okay.
They also have a very high content of iron. So this is an analysis of the iron content in these stones. Iron is essential for the transmission of voltage via Faraday's law of electromagnetic induction. Iron is critical.
Okay.
Just so happens that in the Sphinx avenues, these things also have mica, which we just talked about, mica being utilized in Stonehenge as a high voltage insulator. These Sphinx statues in the Sphinx avenues are also made of micaceous minerals. They have hard iron nodules and they have pyrite crystals. So the materials from which each structure is made is indicative of the function of each type of construction material. For example, red, white, and black. Mm. White is electric fields. Black is heat storage. Red is ultrasound. Anytime you see mica or iron.
Okay. Yeah. Granite's an insulator. This is where we get into this stuff that's, you're not conducting electricity with certain stones. I'm sorry. I understand what he's talking about. I understand he's talking about big distances. I understand he's talking about lightning strikes and stuff. But you have to understand that like granite is about as conductive as dry wood. And like you could pour lightning down granite. I mean, if you attached a LED to fucking two pieces of granite and poured your positive and your negative, you could pour lightning down granite and it's not going to barely move that bulb. This is unfortunate. Let me point out again. This is where, as I've said this 100 times before, and this is something that I think it's really important. It's one of the things that Milo Rossi said in that Two Sphinx video. It's important to evaluate claims, even ones that seem crazy. It's important to evaluate them properly. And I'll take it a step further and say that, just because somebody's wrong about one thing doesn't mean that they're wrong about all of it. They can have ideas that are heading in the right direction and then they hit a wall and they don't do right. Does that make sense? They can have ideas that are, that are outlandish and that are heading in the right direction and then they completely just piss up a rope. But they can also lead us to things. How many hippies talked about how many different applications for freaking fractals before we got fractal cell phone antennas, right? These aren't, are all the other people just pissing up a rope? When they test 10,000 chemicals for something, do the 9,999 that fail, are those all failed? This is how we advance. So I don't have a problem, again, with true believers being wrong about things or saying things that I don't necessarily agree with. It's just that there's a lot of things like that I'm just going to point out and be like, man, I think you need to look at the resistance that a piece of granite offers to electrical flow.
Think high voltage electromagnetic induction. And pyrite is actually a semiconductor, where it's an insulator at low voltage and a conductor at high voltage. So it's ideal for the electromagnetic induction distribution of high voltage current from the primary receiver into the head end of the Avebury Serpent Temple complex and into Luxor. So basically, you're reducing the voltage.
Got it.
Lightning is a ton of voltage, mm-hmm. like millions of volts, instantaneous.
Right.
And when lightning hits the ground, it doesn't go straight down. It goes out across the surface of the earth. So some of that voltage is going to be sent down these avenues of stone. As the voltage passes through each stone, the iron is utilized to induce electromagnetic fields, electromagnetic induction, that allows that current to be passed down through each stone, strategically reducing the voltage as it flows down these stone avenues. This also may involve the...
You won't be able to strategically reduce shit because it's going to be gone. Like, Like when lightning strikes, it's best illustrated when you see it hit water, because the resistance is all generally the same and it's pretty see-through. You see an arc, you see a ball, the same as so many other forces in nature. It tends to form a sphere. And yes, you can hypothetically direct it down metal currents, down iron pathways, but it's not stone pathways. This is going to, it's going to do the opposite. You're going to have the stone is going to have to be mostly iron, and the iron's going to have to be connected or really close to it. So yeah, this is where he is losing me at this point. With I am exceptionally more skeptical of this than I am the other stuff he's talked about so far. Yeah, that's a good question, Nick. I'm sure that he has talked to some people about some of this stuff, but I don't know to what degree. Dan, have you heard about the Egyptian hieroglyphs drawn as rock art? And also, I've heard about that, but I haven't dug into it too deeply yet. Yeah, 757. Yes, it's how do you put it? Yet the connection comes from the ground up, but there's a dissipation of it depends on the situation, but there's a dissipation of the energy, and the energy dissipates into the ground. let's see if I can find an image here real quick. For fuck's sake. Do-do-do-do-do. Trying to find. Yeah, it looks like there's no images very good that I'm able to find. I'll have to look this up. We call this Ohm's Law. Yes, sir. It's not very complicated, is it? The whole Ohm's Law thing. It's not very tricky at all. It's you know how it is. We do the math. Watch those cacti. Yes, sirree, Bob. Let's see what else we got here. Let's carry on.
The dielectric breakdown of air, which is exactly what lightning is. It's an electrostatic phenomenon that happens because of dielectric breakdown of air. It's a very complicated way to describe what lightning is. Mm-hmm. So let me animate it here. So the voltage is introduced into the first stone. It induces electromagnetic flux that then induces voltage in the next one, and it's passed down the line.
So this is at Luxor?
This is at Luxor, correct.
Isn't it crazy that some of those big statues at Luxor, those sphinxes, or what are those faces, those giant faces that they have there, yeah, are like so perfectly symmetrical?
Yes.
You think there was a function to that symmetry?
So the symmetry of the faces in the statues? Mm-hmm. Not necessarily. I think that was just the aesthetic style of the dynastic Egyptian iconography. Okay. It's all very symmetrical.
What are those statues made of?
Typically red granite.
Just red granite?
Yeah. Yeah. The statues are mostly red granite.
And the explanation for how they carved those perfectly symmetrical faces was with what tool? What kind of tools?
So they don't have a good explanation for exactly how those things were carved.
Right.
You would have had progressively finer tools and then also polishing compounds. Mm-hmm. So you would have had different tools for the excavation, mm-hmm, the different tools for the raw shaping. Same thing we do with modern masonry and sculpture today,
right.
Is that the closer you get to the end product, the smaller and finer the tools are.
Yeah.
So by the time you're actually shaping the face and carving it into its final form, mm-hmm, you're using very, very small, very accurate tools to be able to carve that.
Mm-hmm.
I've talked about this on my channel before. They had a thing called the pointing machine, and this was just a device that they were using in the Greek days and the Roman days to reproduce statues. And it allowed you to measure something in three dimensions and make accurate reproductions of statues. So this was something that, that wasn't unheard of in the ancient times. So it's quite possible they were using it in ancient Egypt in order to reproduce both sides of the statues' faces. But now, I've got a real problem with what he was showing there with these different things, like being energized, these little sphinxes, one in a row. That's, those things would need something. They would need to be insulated from the ground, first of all, right off the bat. If they're part, like, those are just like in the bedrock, that fucking, you're not doing anything with that. It's just dissipating. And the other thing is you're going to need something that conducts. And I don't mean partial. I don't mean like this could maybe conduct if the situation was right. I mean, like, you need a conductor. Okay. Let's put it this way. Those teeny little copper leads that they found in the fucking robot chamber there, Gattenbrink's door in the Great Pyramid. Those little things, they're not going to carry much electricity, right? That's like fucking probably 12 gauge wire on its best day. We're probably closer to 16. We're tiny little pieces of wire, right? Pencil lead thickness. It's not holding much. Okay. But that's going to hold 10 times the electricity that a piece of limestone will. It's going to conduct 1,000 times more electricity than a piece of fucking limestone will. So this is where I have, like, all of these things where they use rocks as conductors have always got me going, dude, you need to retry reproducing this on any level, and you will find vitrification of rock, because that shit's going to fucking melt before it does anything. It's not going to conduct electricity. It's going to melt. So this is where I do, again, this doesn't mean the other stuff that he's talked about so far. Like, honestly, the idea of these obelisks being made to attract lightning is fundamentally one of the best hypotheses that I've heard for those edifices yet. And this is exactly why I say you don't throw out babies with bathwaters. Like, I got somebody saying Ben Van Kirkwick's getting angry about this right now. Just because I don't think Ben is right that it took ancient high technology on the level that he thinks it does to make those vases doesn't mean that I think Ben has done bad work. In fact, he's pushed the dating of the primitive lathe back by 1,500 years or so at a minimum. That's huge. That's a big fucking deal, man. And you can say that's no big deal, but to me, that's absolutely a huge deal. Now, it might not be the technology he's looking for, but it is a big deal as far as I'm concerned. It's good work, and it's getting ignored because, well, he's crazy Ben. He's in the Atlantis bro community, right? Yeah, gold veins through rocks would help, but 757 points out. But yeah, we would need something in order to, you need to know which ones had the veins running through it and whatnot. Yeah, dude, there's a whole lot. I don't think that. There's a whole lot of problem. There's a whole lot of problems with the high, when you get into the higher electricity functions of some of this stuff. I have a lot of problems.
And there are structures that modern masons use to create symmetry. I forget the name of the piece, but it has these pins in it, and the pins have measurements. So as you're shaping each side of the stone, you can track the distance of the pins to make sure that each side is symmetrical.
Okay.
It's a technique that we still use today that uses
the pointing machine, as we just say.
Very rudimentary apparatus where all the pins are like in a grid. And each one of the pins, as you work the stone, you move the pin in to track the symmetry of the carving.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they still use that today.
Okay.
Yeah, but in my opinion, the more difficult thing is carving realistic stuff. It's way harder to carve something realistically than it is to make symmetrically. Mm-hmm. Like the Greek and Roman stuff. To make it look like an actual human face is way harder.
And yeah, those stones were softer though, right?
Like they have stuff like marble. And they were carving out of porphyry and granite, same thing. But they say,
is it marble soft?
I don't know about, I don't think marble soft.
What is the Statue of David made out of, marble?
I have no idea. Not my area of expertise, but they say that the reason the Greeks and Romans were able to do that is because they had iron.
Okay.
And that's the big conjecture about the carving of stuff in Egypt, is that they didn't have iron. Yeah, so 3 to 5, softer than granite, but harder than other stuff.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and they say that because the Greeks and Romans had iron, they were able to carve granite more easily.
Okay.
But the Egyptians, so they say, didn't have iron. Right. It's also a myth that it was pure copper. It was never 100% pure copper. No legitimate academic would ever say that they were using 100% pure copper.
Okay, interesting.
It's arsenical copper. 90% copper, 10% arsenic.
Oh.
Yeah, I'll do you one better. The earliest iron that we've got is about 700 years into the Bronze Age. It's in Anatolia, about 600 to 800 miles, I think it is, from Egypt. I covered this in my video on the iron plate in the Great Pyramid, but these guys were making, they were forging iron without very good understanding. So there was a wide variety there was a wide variation in quality of what they were making. And so my hypothesis is they traded their crap-ass iron to the Egyptians to go see God with and their pyramids, and they used the good stuff to make weapons with. But it is quite possible that the Egyptians were able to procure iron tools from these guys. And I know we don't have any evidence of them in the record, but I also have to point out that these are the kind of things that disappear very easily. As I pointed out a number of times, if you go to your bank today and try to buy 20 rolls of quarters in the search of silver quarters from pre-1964, you're probably not going to get any. And that does not mean that that bank never had any 50 years ago, 80 years ago, that they were falling out of that bank. Every quarter you got was made out of mostly silver. There's a thing called selection bias. People pick shit up and things change. It's crazy how that works. So it's quite possible if there was any, let's put it this way, there's a bunch of iron used in the Colosseum. Now you just got a bunch of holes where the iron was, but we know iron was used there, right? So this is where we can speculate to a degree and have our speculation be rooted in a degree of reality. I'm sorry about that, Heitzman. I agree that the ads during lives is frustrating. Guys got to make a dollar off of this shit somehow, though, right?
Okay. That completely changes the property of the copper.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and the particulate abrasives. Again, the abrasives are the magic of ancient Egyptian stonework. Corundum abrasives. Corundum abrasives, correct.
And that's the corundum is what you were explaining to me, what we were talking about on our Patreon that we did. Yeah. The corundum is similar to ruby.
Yes, it's the same mineral as ruby, which is the second hardest mineral on the planet, second only to diamond.
And then, so the corundum abrasive would have been used for things like those perfectly straight cuts, like that look like they were done with circular saws on some of those stones.
Yeah, so the abrasive is poured into the saw cut. And the blade moves that abrasive around, and the abrasive is actually what does the cutting.
Mm-hmm.
So as the blade itself moves that slurry in the saw cut, the corundum particulate abrasive that they found chemical analysis that shows that there was particulate abrasive in these saw cuts that is indicative of this slurry compound.
Got it.
The abrasive is what does the cutting.
Got it.
Corundum.
Got it.
And corundum is harder than granite. Mm. Corundum is the second hardest mineral on the planet, second only to diamond.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay, so let's move forward here. So this voltage distribution is also directly connected to the function of the Serapeum, which we'll get to in just a sec. Let's talk about Teotihuacan, the function of Teotihuacan. So you have three different structures at the Teotihuacan complex.
Mm-hmm.
You have the temple of the feathered serpent.
Mm-hmm.
So anytime you hear feathered serpent, Quetzalcoatl, you know, again, there's communication encoded in the structures. That is literally telling you that this is where lightning strikes.
This is pretty crazy where they just kind of... crazy is the wrong word. It's very typical. I see this with a lot of different theories about pyramids where the people they're all the same in the regards that the pyramids over in Egypt were used for the same ones at Teotihuacan and stuff. And now personally I have a problem with that on its I have a problem with that on the... Sorry, the chat's distracting you when you guys argue with about the YouTube Red, YouTube Premium, whatever the fuck they call it nowadays. YouTube ad-free gendered reveal parties. At any rate, speaking of gender reveal parties, I saw some pretty funny comedians when I was in Austin, and one of them is that Jamar Neighbors. One of the funniest jokes that I've ever heard in my life was the guy says... his gender reveal parties, he holds his breath. If it's red, it's a girl. If it's purple, it's a boy. But either way, it don't matter because he's going to die because fuck that kid. That made me laugh pretty good. Anyway, point here, anytime that we start extrapolating from one site to another and we have to jump the pond, you lose me in a lot of ways. I don't lose me, but my skepticism goes up. Even with archaeoastronomy, even with just a simple, we make the same connection between these stars in this area as we do in that area. It's like, I don't have a problem with Turkey and Egypt and Greece all having the same thing because we knew they had trade routes through there for like a kajillion fucking years. But when you start saying South America had the same ideas, I do kick the tires on. And we know that South America wasn't like that, right? We know that South America had way different ideas about constellations. In fact, for those of you who aren't aware, like when you look up at the Milky Way and you see those black spots in the middle that are like the negative spaces in the Milky Way, they actually saw constellations in those, which is fucking crazy if you think about it. That's wild to me when you think about it. Yeah, I don't pay for YouTube Premium, and you think they give it to me for free, but they don't give me anything for free. They give me an agent to talk to for free, but I haven't talked to her yet. She called me up, and she had a really thick accent, and she knew my name and phone number, and that kind of scared me. I said, I don't know about you. Yeah, Peru Constellations of the Dark Areas of the Sky. C757 knows what's up.
Temple of the Feathered Serpent. Yeah, the Pyramid of the Sun and the Pyramid of the Moon. And the voltage from lightning strikes was being distributed into these other structures. So this is the Pyramid of the Sun. This is the Pyramid of the Moon. And this is the remains of the Temple of the Feathered Serpent, Quetzalcoatl or Kukulkan. Same deity. One is Mayan, one is Aztec.
Okay.
So they did excavations at the Teotihuacan complex, and they found tunnels below all of these structures. Vast tunnel systems running below the structures. And they found deposits of liquid mercury. So here's one of the tunnels below the Temple of the Feathered Serpent. And they found liquid mercury below the Temple of the Feathered Serpent.
I've heard of this. Yeah. Luke was telling me this.
Yes. Yeah. Now, there's a little something weird going on, because in all of the articles, there are no pictures of this liquid mercury, which is a little odd. It's reported in tons of articles, but there are no actual pictures or evidence of this liquid mercury. They say they found it, but there's no evidence in terms of pictures.
Okay.
Tell me more how archaeology is a real science, people. Please, tell me more. Let's see some replicability brought to bear on this. You fucking erase the data and it's gone forever and we can never get it back. That's the archaeology is, these guys are floundering, fumble fucking around. Whatever was going on down there got sold to the highest bidder, ended up in some rich dude's fucking basement. This is how it goes every single fucking time. It's in the same place as the Baghdad battery. It's in the same place as the skulls that fucking Rockefeller got from Paracas. It's in the same place as a bunch of the skulls from the Pacific Northwest. It's in the same place as a whole shitload of artifacts that were claimed to have existed and then claimed to have been lost. And you know, in 100 years from now, when our great-grandkids are sitting around talking about how stupid we are, and they're like, can you believe that they actually believed that there was a battery from 1,500 years ago in Iraq, the Baghdad battery? Well, so stupid. They're going to look at it like a lot of people do now about giant bones. Those people were so stupid back then. You mark my words. The next time the anti-Kithra mechanism security is low, that fucking thing's going to disappear. G-O-H and gone. You're going to end up on somebody's goddamn shelf.
So, again, an image here. They also found pyrite spheres. So we just talked about pyrite being utilized within the Sphinx Avenue step-down voltage transformers. We've also found pyrite spheres, mica, and liquid mercury in the Teotihuacan complex. Pyrite, again, is a semiconductor, an insulator at low voltage and conductive at high voltage. This is just an image of some of the tunnels that are found below the Temple of the Feathered Serpent. So this is the Temple of the Feathered Serpent.
And what technology did they use to find those, to map those tunnels?
No, they physically excavated.
They went down there?
Yeah, they went down in there. Whoa, yeah, yeah.
Fuck, when?
So I don't know exactly when those excavations were carried out, but it's fairly recent.
Okay.
Yeah. So this is the Temple of the Feathered Serpent that has this dragon descending down the side of it. And anytime you see a dragon or a feathered serpent, it's telling you that this is where lightning struck.
Mm-hmm.
And the configuration of this temple reminds me very much of the solar temple at Abu Ghraib, which is a temple that had a huge obelisk on the top of it that was the attractor and primary object that was struck by lightning.
Hey, thanks, Prometheus Lens. Yeah, I've been gone for a couple of weeks, been out of town. So, I had to go to Austin and run around all crazy style. I haven't been to the Coral Castle yet. But I don't think that the Coral Castle is going to prove that a guy could build a pyramid. It'll prove that one person could do a lot more than you might think. But do I believe that truth can be expressed through many cultures, time, and understanding? Yeah, to a degree, yes. But, thanks, man. Yeah, I'm okay. I'm fortunate. The fires here have not been too, I'm not saying they're not too bad. They just haven't caught me, fortunately. So I'm lucky in those regards. Liquid mercury is also supposed to be in the Chinese pyramids. You see, this is the kind of thing it would be interesting to look into. It's unfortunate because a lot of this stuff just disappears. Like Luke, when I saw him at the Quest for Ancient Civilizations in Sedona, he showed the only photographs that I've ever seen of the jade mummy that was like the mummy's sarcophagus or whatever that was a jade royal that was in the bottom of one of the big pyramids in Mexico. And it's like You know, I emailed the Mexican Museum asking for pictures and stuff. It's listed in the Wikipedia article. It's listed in the excavation reports, but you can't find anything else anywhere about it. And it's insane. It's insane. It's like a lot of this stuff is just not, it's not properly archived. And, you know, we start coming, it's like this, these kinds of videos and stuff are getting extremely popular. This kind of inquiry is getting extremely popular as of late. And as we come into this, we see so many things are being covered up. Like, a lot of things you'll have been screaming about for a while, but some of these things, it's like the cover up is happening in real time. And, you know, in some cases, I don't think it's too nefarious. In some cases, I think it's just people being people trying to, you know, weasel a few bucks out of something. But in other cases, when I was talking to Duncan Trussell on the Mystery Boys podcast, that hopefully will be live in a few days. It's one of the things that he kept asking. He's like, why do I think I do it? I don't have a good answer. I really don't know why they would be hiding our past the way they do, but they fucking do. There's a certain point where it becomes clear. It's like when they tell you, we have the bones, they're in a museum. No, you can't have pictures of them. No, you can't have measurements of them. No, you can't even get a drawing of them. But we have them. That's a cover-up. All right? It's as much of a cover-up as when they say, hey, we got a list of people who went to this island, and we redacted it. In fact, if for those of you who didn't see my fucking last video, I was so surprised to see this, and I'm going to start covering this more and more. They're the fucking shitload of places that they just straight up redact the fucking basic information of when they reported in the archaeology findings. Straight up fucking basic shit they redact, which I do not fucking understand whatsoever. And they say, oh, well, we're going to redact it so people don't know where the site is, diluted. But they fucking tell you in the same paper, here's the unexcavated portions of this place, come loot. But they redact people and artifacts that were found. Fuckery abounds, dude. Fuckery abounds. People, I'm skeptical of a lot of things. One thing I'm not skeptical of is people being shitty. We'll go for another 10 minutes or so, and then I'm going to call it tomorrow again. Catch me. For those of you who are channel members, I'll be doing a live stream tomorrow for channel members only. It'll be tremendous. You're going to love it. We'll talk about other stuff. And since there probably won't be any ads on it, since I don't need to run ads, it's just for you guys. And I'll even say things like poopy butt that I won't normally say because I don't want to get in trouble. Hey, Trish. Oi. No, I'm sorry, Cameron. I wish I could stay longer, man. But I'm recently back in town. I've got videos I'm working on and stuff. I got to play catch up. What time is it, Central? It's 5:22 right now, so it would be 7:22 Central, right? Yes, thank you, Sherm.
So, again, always connected to agriculture. Mm. So look at the configuration of the Teotihuacan Serpent Temple Complex, and we also have a source of water with the San Juan River running through the center of the complex. So again, we have a source of subterranean water that's directly connected to telluric currents. Telluric currents being directly connected to lightning strike locations.
Right.
We have the exact same thing here. So what were they using the mercury for? Mercury can be used to amalgamate gold. So this is gold being dissolved into liquid mercury. It's called amalgamation, where liquid mercury will amalgamate and dissolve gold, which is a way that you can process gold ore.
And what does the gold turn into when you dissolve it?
It's a mercury amalgam.
Okay.
So that's a specific word that you use to describe metals dissolving into mercury. And then you can distill that amalgam to get purified gold. It's a purification method used for taking gold ore and turning it into pure gold metal.
Hey, thank you, Timmy. Muchas gracias, my friend. Sorry, Cameron. I appreciate that. Did you notice this is an important thing to talk about here. Mercury amalgamation is one of the primary ways they used to mine gold back in the days. And when they would do that, when they would do their mercury amalgamation, they would use fire to separate the two. Mercury will just boil right off. I've heard it's pretty good. It's like DMT. I think you just smoke it and you see God, but whatever. At any rate, that's how they would process gold a lot of the times back in those days. Speaking of the DMT thing, I couldn't help but making a joke because Neil deGrasse Tyson and his, you know, his infinite cuckery is his, following whichever direction the wind blows. He's now talking about how aliens might be real and maybe they're extra dimensional. Maybe they live outside of our three dimensions. And I saw him say that and I couldn't help but just retweet it and be like, somebody just discovered DMT. It's like, Jesus Christ, man. Congratulations. Terrence McKenna would like to have a word with you, but he's been dead for fucking 40 years or however long. And he's way ahead of you on this shit, you fucking needle nit. Fucking Neil deGrasse Tyson's hilarious. It's like so sad that they passed Carl Sagan's torch on to him. Carl Sagan was such a fucking genius when it came to combining the ability to navigate a fucking social setting, the ability to read a room, and the ability to understand basic science and to not be a fucking idiot. Sagan was just like, and then we get fucking Neil deGrasse Tyson to come in there and his infinite line of fucking retards that we've had since. My dear God. These people, I don't know if you guys know this or not, but sometimes I get frustrated with the debunker types and the guys that try to toe a line. Yeah, he is a needle dick or noodle dick, a dickle knight, something like that.
So for processing of metal ores.
Is this used today?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. This is a picture of distillation in a mercury amalgam retort.
Got it.
Which is used to purify gold.
Okay.
Okay. So the Temple of the Sun, the Temple of the Moon, and the Quetzalcoatl Serpent Temple Complex. So from an alchemical perspective, the Pyramid of the Sun is an alchemical symbol for gold. The Moon is an alchemical symbol for silver. So the Teotihuacan Temple Complex is using liquid mercury for processing gold and silver ore.
One problem here is the Pyramid of the Sun and the Pyramid of the Moon were named by white dudes. The Teotihuacan Pyramids of the Sun and the Moon. Now let's double check. Sometimes Dan's wrong. I hate it when he's wrong. Fucking idiot. But I am pretty certain. Pyramid of the Sun, Moon. Okay, well, I'm in the AI mode. I hate AI. So we're named by the Aztecs. They discovered the city in the 14th century. So combination of things, not named by honkies, but not named by the people that built the site. So we still, my point there, the guys that built the site naming it the Pyramids of the Sun and the Moon aren't something we can say. We don't know what the guys that built the site named it. We just know what the people that used the site, the Aztecs, found it. But now this is one of the fun things is, you know, they did find it. The Aztecs did find the site, which is interesting. Oh, yeah, I'm going to get some rest here in a minute. I'll go ahead and stop pulling up the video for now. We've watched enough and had some fun. And I really do appreciate the memberships that have been gifted out. You guys, we're going to enjoy tomorrow. Yes, honkies. For those of you who think that I'm saying honkies is some sort of insult to white people, you're fucking crazy, dude. I'm saying honkies is a fucking joke. Clearly, tongue-in-cheek. Clearly a joke. Clearly. For fuck's sake, dude. Oh, my dear God. It's funny, all right? Speaking of Jamar Neighbors, that dude, he made me laugh my fucking ass off. Jamar says to me, he's a dude in the thumbnail with the mohawk. He says to me, like, I'm getting his number and putting him into my Instagram, and we're at a bar, and he's like, Jamar, and I start typing in Jamal. When I said Jamal, and he's like, no, Jamar, you fucking racist. I about died laughing because that is pretty good, right? Thank you, Mr. 757. I will honkify it up. Yeah, I really appreciate everybody coming and hanging out. I'll post in the community tab tomorrow. What time the live stream will be. I got to double check when my kids' wrestling practice is. I ain't going to step on that, but I'll try to do the live stream then so I'm not pissing on his internet stuff. He can call all of his friends those one-syllable insults that they like to do on their video games. Goddamn youngins playing their video game terriblenesses. But, yeah, it's really awesome. I really appreciate you guys. it's pretty fun going and hanging out in the in Austin and like hanging out with all these different comedians and stuff. The comedians are a lot of fun to just chill with because they don't get as upset about things as a lot of the true believers do in the pyramidiot sphere. And that makes it a lot easier for me. Well, I hope you get to catch more too, Carrie. Thank you. Yeah, take care, Dylan. Yes, Professor Dave loves his new helmet. Take care, Salty Texian. Yes, I will see you tomorrow. Really appreciate it, everybody. You guys have a good day. I'm going to click the end stream now, and we'll start waving. And oh my.